Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Dr. Ron DeHaven, administrator of the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. And joining us in our conversation is Mike Wasson. Well, Dr. DeHaven, let's talk about mad cow disease. And with the scare of the disease entering the United States, how is APHIS able to track and test cattle for the disease?
Well, we have actually been testing cattle for bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE, since 1990, increasing every year the number of animals that we test. In 2002, 2003, we tested some 20,000 animals, and these are animals from what we consider to be the high risk or target population, meaning that if we do have the disease, these would be the animals that would be most likely to test positive, some 30 times more likely than the average adult cow in our population. Because of the recent cases in North America, both of them native-born in Canada, but one found in the U.S., we have entered into an enhanced surveillance program beginning June 1st of this year. Since June 1st, we have tested somewhere in the neighborhood of 98,000 animals in this high-risk or target population, and of course, all of them thus far have been negative. Our goal is, during a 12-month period, we want to test a statistically significant number that would, if we have the disease in the U.S., even at a prevalence as low as one animal out of 10 million that's positive, that we would find the disease. So our goal is, during this 12-month period, to test somewhere in excess of 250,000 animals, and then can say with some degree of statistical significance whether or not we have the disease, and if so, at what prevalence.
Take our listeners through the process of testing. You describe statistics, so I have a picture in my mind of sampling, much like we would anything else, and then running the tests. And so I'm curious, is that right? And just what does the test entail?
That is correct, Paul. We unfortunately don't have any live animal tests available to us at this point in time. There's no blood test. In fact, the test involves getting a piece of tissue from a very specific section of the brain in the brain stem. So we're collecting these samples from animals that have died on the farm, have gone to slaughter, or otherwise would be animals that have died or are destined to be slaughtered. We're picking these samples up off of animals that die on the farm. Typically they're sent to a rendering plant and we collect the tissues at rendering. Some animals that become non-ambulatory at slaughter, they go down, if you will, and are not allowed into the human food chain, we test those animals as well. But also animals that are going to public health laboratories and state diagnostic veterinary laboratories, animals that are showing some central nervous system disorder. So after the animal dies or is otherwise selected for testing and is euthanized, this portion of the brain, a small piece of tissue, is taken from that section of the brain, and then it's subjected to one of half a dozen different tests that we've approved for this purpose. These are rapid screening tests. So the samples are collected at slaughter plants, rendering plants, diagnostic laboratories, and then that sample is shipped to one of seven laboratories around the country where this testing is done. If any of the animals or tests come up anything other than negative on one of those screening tests, then it goes to our national reference laboratory. That's our National Veterinary Services Laboratories in Ames, Iowa, for confirmatory testing.
Are there steps to implement measures and risk assessments for better effectiveness of tracking disease? As we were preparing, I was reading about the Animal Registry Program.
The Animal Registry, I assume, Paul, you're talking about our National Animal Identification System, which is the system that we are currently developing that would provide for some kind of electronic identification on every animal, livestock species of animals in the country. It's almost ironic in that because of the recent finding of the BSE case in the state of Washington, we're on an accelerated path to implement this national animal identification. And ironic in that BSE is a non-contagious disease, so it's one that we have the luxury of a matter of days or even weeks to trace animals. On the other hand, if we were to have a highly contagious disease enter the United States, such as foot and mouth disease, we would need to be able to track animals in a matter of hours in order to be able to contain and hopefully eventually eradicate that kind of disease that might be introduced into the United States. So while certainly animal identification on every animal in the country would be useful for a number of domestic disease programs that we have ongoing, Certainly in terms of our BSE testing program, it would be critical to have that kind of system in place were we to have the introduction of a highly contagious foreign animal disease. The system that we're implementing would then involve electronic identification on the animal, and there's a number of different technologies that can be used, such as radio frequency, ID, microchips. But the idea would be that in a maximum of 48 hours, we could trace animals that were infected or had been exposed to infected animals.
Well, Dr. DeHaven, recently APHIS partnered up with the Food and Drug Administration and the Environmental Protection Agency on developing a single portal on agriculture biotechnology regulations, which is usbiotechreg.nbii.gov. Can you tell us how this came about and what this site offers?
Well, the three agencies that are involved in regulating agricultural biotechnology, APHIS, Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, and EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, all have very distinct and different roles. But the public really wants one site where they can go to answer all of their questions, regardless of which agency might have specific regulatory authority. So we worked with our colleagues at FDA and EPA, as well as the White House's Office of Science, Technology, Policy, to develop this website. As with all of our regulatory programs, our goal is to be open and very transparent in the process so that we can have a coordinated and risk-based approach. I think biotechnology represents some unique challenges in that we walk a very thin tightrope in terms of ensuring that we have adequate regulations to ensure protection of the public and the environment, but at the same time not over-regulating to the extent that we unduly restrict growth in an industry that has so much to offer to society.
Well, earlier this year, USDA and APHIS will prepare an evaluation of its biotechnology regulations and several possible regulation changes, including the development of a multi-tiered risk-based permitting system and the enhancements of the deregulation process to provide flexibility for long-term monitoring. How is this process coming along, and what impacts does this have on the stakeholders?
Mike, you're right. In January of this year, we published a notice of intent in the Federal Register and said in this notice that we plan to prepare an environmental impact statement, or EIS, to consider possible changes to our biotechnology regulations. Through the EIS and a change in regulations, it would provide for a multi-tiered system that would provide some flexibility in the commercialization process for biotechnology products, genetically engineered products, and provide for new policies in field testing, for example, for pharmaceutical plants that are genetically engineered to produce pharmaceutical compounds or other industrial compounds, as well as providing a mechanism for dealing with adventitious presence. That would be the presence of genetically modified organisms in organisms that are thought to be or expected to be non-genetically modified. Before even starting this process, however, we met with stakeholders and got their input, and through this notice of an intent to prepare an environmental impact statement, received over 3,000 public comments. We've reviewed and considered those comments, and we are currently in the process of writing this environmental impact statement, the impact that new regulations might have. The public will once again have an opportunity to comment on this EIS, and then ultimately we would be publishing a proposed rule once again for public comment. So, again, emphasizing our open and transparent process in developing any new regulations.
Well, in the wake of terrorist attacks against the U.S., bioterrorism has been of a great concern. For instance, the Bush administration passed the Agricultural Bioterrorism Protection Act of 2002 and the Homeland Security Act of 2002. What is APHIS's part against bioterrorism?
It's been part of our responsibility in APHIS to respond to the introduction of foreign animal plants and plant diseases and pests, as well as animal diseases. So we have considered ourselves for several decades to be first responders when there's a accidental introduction of a plant disease or pest or an animal disease. What has changed, obviously, with the recent times, most notably since 9/11, is the recognition or realization that we not only are vulnerable to an accidental introduction of pest or disease, we are vulnerable to an intentional introduction, an introduction that could have far-reaching implications for the economy of the United States. So we have renewed and emphasized our role not just in dealing with domestic disease programs, but in terms of response to the introduction of a foreign animal disease or plant pest and disease, recognizing that that could be an intentional introduction. We have worked closely with FEMA to develop what's called an Emergency Support Function for Agriculture, ESF-11. APHIS has the lead in that, meaning that just like FEMA has a responsibility to respond to natural disasters like earthquakes or hurricanes, the FEMA function would also apply to an agricultural emergency, such as an unexpected or intentionally introduced foreign animal disease or plant disease. So through this Emergency Support Function and working with FEMA, APHIS would have the lead in responding to an agricultural emergency, but through FEMA would have all of the resources of the federal government at our disposal to deal with that kind of situation. APHIS is also the lead agency for the agricultural component of the Bioterrorism Protection Act of 2002, where we have worked very closely with CDC in coming up with a program to ensure that university laboratories and private laboratories that are dealing with agents that could have a bioterrorist use, that there is proper controls and inventory of those kinds of agents. We refer to them as select agents. We actually have a liaison person with APHIS who works at CDC, who works with them on issues that would affect both animals and plants, zoonotic diseases, if you will, as well as any bioterrorist agent that would have not just human health, but also animal health implications.
How is e-government being used to streamline processes at APHIS? We'll ask Dr. Ron DeHaven, its administrators, to tell us about this when the Business of Government Hour returns.